Hi, I'm here with Daniel, who is fresh. Well, not quite fresh. Back from Selhurst Park yesterday.
Perhaps I'm always fresh.
Always fresh, yeah.
This T-shirt is only 78 years old, I think. And
yeah.
I may or may not have worn it to pick my daughter up from school half an hour ago. But
very
I was
good.
Thinking about it as I was walking up. For those of you who are listening, I'm wearing a T-shirt from Kez, which involves the raising of two fingers. And then I was walking to school and I thought, oh, I'm wearing this. And then I thought I definitely read and watched Kez when I was in primary school. So
yeah.
I think you're right.
I think you're right. It's a classic of people of our age. Also that. So, yeah, probably the only bright spot of the United v Crystal Palace game was the fans. When Jamie Carragher is calling the fans out, Manchester United is doing a good job. He said the players didn't deserve the reception they got. I don't know.
That's very true.
They did not, but neither did the manager either.
What I would say is I've been going to football for now for 39 years. So that's quite a long time.
Yeah.
And the standard of farting by someone near me was honestly like nothing I had experienced before. It was like 30 men had shat in my nostrils. And it was so intense that it was the topic of much discussion. And eventually someone says, all right, that one was me. And you think, well, what about the eight before it? Or are we just taking responsibility for that one? The other thing that happened in the crowd during the game, less worthy of praise, I guess, was there was a guy behind me who was shouting homophobic shit. I let it go the first time. And then I thought, why the fuck did I do that? Like, if he'd said something Jewish, I wouldn't have done. As it happens, a close mate of mine was one of the founder members of Rainbow Devils. And I thought, if he was here, I wouldn't have let that go either. So the next time I did, and I wasn't trying not to be confrontational. I just said, listen, there are a lot of words available to you. So would you mind using one that isn't that?
Yeah.
And he intimated that if I didn't shut up, then we'd have to scuffle. I got in my face. And at that point, it's like, I'm a lover, not a fighter. I was also taking my friend's 13-year-old son. So again, I
probably not to give, don't give
well,
him a punch up. Yeah.
If I had have done, the parents would have said, yeah, you did what you had to do.
Yeah.
And it was one of those situations where he's standing on his chair shouting it and no one else said jack shit. And then as he's becoming aggressive and getting in my face, the person next to him says, who I think was a mate of his, says you don't want to get banned. And I don't know if it was that or the prospect of a kicking off of me. I mean, I presume it was that.
Sure.
All right, Mr. 6'2". that made him shut. He did then let it be. But yeah, otherwise, I mean, United's there. It was a good United end, which I imagine you would expect because to schlep for that from Manchester,
yeah,
you've got to be someone, you're doing it as a matter of course.
To be
bothered. When we've seen loads of that game before where it was nothing to play for at the end of the season. The 4-0 at Everton stands out as one. There was a 2-0 at Everton under Moyes as well, which was Moyes' last game. That one I quite enjoyed because I knew that was it. Whereas it doesn't necessarily feel like that here.
It doesn't, but United, since you're bringing it around to Moyes, United are now guaranteed to finish with fewer points than in the Moyes season, which was 13th defeat in the Premier League last night, which says something about just how bad this season has been. And, good for you for calling out the homophobe in the crowd and for trekking all the way to the darkest part of Croydon. Did you take public transport?
Come on, man.
Oh, Norwood.
I don't know if this is why, but I got the tube and the bus to school every day for 7 years. And that felt like I'd done my time. And since then, I've been a drive wherever possible individual, which I guess is probably not environmental. And probably I shouldn't be doing that. But yeah, I anywhere that I can drive, I do drive.
Yeah.
Because I guess I always get a seat in my own car.
I'm sure you're glad of it after the game. So I guess we ought to talk about some of the some other game, which was like, I don't know if that's the most dreadful performance this season or under Erik ten Hag, but it was not in the top five. I mean, because there was absolutely nothing redeeming about this performance.
No, I mean, the last manager, as far as I can recall, who conceded four goals at Palace, I mean, he conceded five, was Franco Farrell.
Yeah, 72.
And he didn't get another game.
No.
There's this great footage, actually, where he walks into the director's box. I think it's even before the game, and Busby totally blanks him. Because in those days, obviously, managers often will watch games from the director's box.
Yeah.
You've got a better view, rather. So that's why Farrell did. And yeah, Busby was having absolutely none of him.
Decision had already been made, hadn't it?
Yeah, so he gets fired. But we keep coming back to the same thing with Ten Hag. And we go, this is fucking bollocks. It's totally unacceptable. You're shit. And then you're like, well, you've got what? Your sixth and your eighth choice centre-backs playing, maybe? Evans and Casemiro? One of two old men. One of them's not a centre-back.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, you've got Wan-Bissaka on the left, which genuinely some of the most mental shit I've ever seen in my life, Wan-Bissaka on the left. What? And Dallo, how can you play good football when that is your back four and when your midfield is Maynou, Eriksen, and Mount, who hasn't played for the best part of the year? How can it be good?
No, it can't be, but the same old tactics, same old problems. United banging it long and leaving and, you know, doing a poorly coordinated high press and leaving a big gap in midfield through which the opposition could attack. So, yeah, you couldn't get a good performance out of that team. Of course, it's a scratch team and a real mess. And the reasons for that are, well, may well be down to Ten Hag as well, but also some bad luck. So, of course, I just guess it's the manner of it and just how poor some of it was from United and just how inevitable it felt. Not necessarily it was going to be 4-0, but that United were going to lose. I had zero confidence that United were going to pull anything out of this game or any of the other games to follow, really.
Well, that's...
The switch is gone.
So. We sort of... I mean, if there wasn't a cup final, we sort of need to keep losing to stay out of the conference.
Yeah, well, the cup final would determine conference or Europa position as well, because United win the cup final, they go into the Europa, they lose it, there's an extra place in the league for the conference. So... Fifth place is not going to England, so Spurs or Villa, looking like Spurs, will be fifth. And then sixth will be the Conference League, and seventh, maybe the Conference League if there's an extra place because City win or United. Anyway, there's a few permutations, but I don't think United are going to get another point this season. Maybe off Brighton because they're dreadful.
I mean, you say that, but Brighton absolutely played Villa off the park yesterday.
They did, yeah.
On Sunday. So it's not... And also, but they have most of their players are there. And I mean, how shit must Amrabat be, man?
He can't even get in this team. Yeah, yeah.
In what world could you play Eriksen instead of giving yourself balance?
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess you've got a bit of a problem with Amrabat and balance because if he's on one side of the scales, you'd have eight people on the other. But I don't know. I couldn't understand how you could possibly play Eriksen in that situation. And it was, the first goal is obviously Casemiro.
Died again.
Like a midfield player.
Yeah, yeah.
You could tackle like that when you've got two people behind you. I mean, Evans also.
Evans got roasted for the second. Casemiro's out of position. Casemiro got bumped off the ball for the fourth. It wasn't He didn't chase.
The first one first, though.
Yeah, go.
Good to see the first one. Because what also happens then is Evans backs away. But when was the last time Evans even played a football match?
Yeah, he's been out for a while. He clearly wasn't.
And here we are. And I felt, it wasn't a great finish in that he sort of, it went in the corner, but it was sort of an into the ground.
Yeah.
I wondered if the keeper might have saved it.
So many errors in that first goal that Casemiro diving in, Evans backing off, scared. There was a rumour going around that he hadn't actually passed his fitness test in the morning, but played anyway. No idea if that's true. It looked like it. And the scuffer, Onana didn't get close to it. I think he's got a problem, Onana, with his feet. He seems to take a step away, anticipating something.
He loves anticipating.
Honestly, he's like a boxer just standing there while Muhammad Ali dances around him. He just doesn't seem to move. So, yeah, definitely a problem there. And then the second goal, I'm trying to remember. The third goal is Malassia, isn't it? And not Malassia. Mitchell.
Elise.
Third goal's Elise. Oh, into the corner. Yeah, the second goal's Mitchell.
The Elise one, I guess when he hit it, I felt like the keeper should have saved it. Saw it again on the screen. And it reminded me a bit of a goal Thierry Henry scores against United in 04, where we draw 1-1 that Arsenal set before we knocked them out of the cup, where behind the goal, you're like, that wasn't anything like the corner.
Yeah.
But then you look at the goalkeeper and it's Roy Carroll. So you assume that, yeah, Caroli the clown has managed to not save it. But actually see it again, you think, he saw it late, the pace that was hit. You're not saving that. And I thought that about the third. Mm. On the first view, I thought you should have stopped it. Second view, I thought, hard to do. But the second goal, what struck me about the second goal wasn't that Evans got roasted by Mateta, because of course he did. He got caught by a faster, stronger player who got the ball on the gallop.
Mm-hmm.
What I thought was, we got a player that can do that. When do we ever put him in a situation where that is a possibility? When do we ever get Højlund one-on-one with a centre-back?
Never. Yeah.
And he's faster and stronger than almost all of them, but we don't understand how to do it. And maybe he doesn't understand how to get himself there either.
Well, it's not how United play under Ten Hag. They play direct football into the corners. And so they don't... I don't know how many touches he had last night. I'm going to guess it's less than 20. In fact, I'm going to live look this up. And I'm going to say it's a very small amount of touches he got. He got 27 touches, 11 accurate passes, right? He just doesn't get the he doesn't get the ball at all. And because United don't play like that, and they want him to be a player who's running into space in behind for crosses that are delivered or low passes into the box. And he's just there. He never gets that either. So
I was thinking about this during the game. And I was wondering, actually, if it's not so much that, it's that if you look at players that Ten Hag's had to play in centre forward before, Haller, Tadic, they're very different players. Like, Haller is more of a sort of a pivot player.
Yeah.
And Tadic isn't a centre forward at all. So I guess he's dropping off and he's also kind of a pivot player. Højlund can sometimes do that well, but that's not what his outstanding skills are. Outstanding skills are driving with the ball, pacing behind, powerful shooting.
Yeah.
And some scavenging. And he's being expected to play like half the time like Teddy Sheringham.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I did see people say he should drop deeper in order to get the ball, and he would get the ball, but I just don't know if dropping deeper and turning and playing other players in, only one, it's not how United play. Two, it'd get in Bruno's zone if he's fit. Yeah, I don't think it plays to Højlund's strength either. So, like, doing a Harry Kane or a Teddy Sheringham and dropping deep to link play would get more involved, but it wouldn't bring his strengths out, which are his pace and his direct running. So,
One of the reasons why Harry Kane dropped back is because he doesn't have that pace. I mean, obviously, he's also brilliant first touch, brilliant vision. But I think that initially he sort of moved there because He didn't have what Højlund does. And while we're talking about Højlund, that red card that wasn't, I didn't get a good view of it at the time. I've seen it since. And this, to me, looks like an unintended consequence of VAR.
Mm.
That if the referee sees that once and he doesn't have VAR to support him, that's a red card.
Mm.
But once he's given not a red card, because I'm not necessarily criticising the officials, it's just sort of human nature. It's much easier not to send someone off there, home player, United, than it is to send them off.
Mm.
So he thinks, well, if it's egregious, then VAR will get involved. I'm not sure why VAR didn't get involved, because it looked fairly egregious. But and obviously, this is speculation. It's not why we lost. But I'm just looking at it more generally in terms of how the application of VAR, that was a red card.
Mm.
As far, I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, because again, like I saw it once in real time, I've seen it once since. But I just felt like without VAR, that is a red card all day.
Well, there's that incident, and then there's the Højlund goal, which was chalked off, which is like the briefest of touches on Dean Henderson. I don't know why we're calling that a foul. It wouldn't be a foul on any other player, would it? So that was a bit weird. Casemiro's goal for offside was definitely offside.
We called that. And I was like, well, that was like, you could see where they were standing before the ball came in.
Yeah.
Saying, what are you doing? You're too far. So the when that actually happened, yeah, that was. Yeah.
It's his last redeeming feature. That's not original thought from me, but his heading. He just needed to be 2 yards offside in order to get to the ball, Casemiro. He got dribbled past 8 times yesterday, which is a Premier League record.
Goodness me.
I know. It's poor guy. Actually, it's got to the point with him that I kind of feel sorry for him. He's obviously not a central defender, but he's obviously someone who's turn the switch off somewhere that says you can't run anymore because he can't. He played 50-something games last season. That was his most ever in his career. And it seems to have had a really big knock-on effect. And like, had he played that many games when he's suspended for half the season as well, but managed to. So a lot of minutes in the legs and he just doesn't seem to be able to hack it anymore, which is a real shame for him.
But, I mean, imagine how bad it would have been if we'd had Bruno. Like that wastrel had been playing, it could have been even worse. It actually showed those of us who think he's good that actually those people who think he's shit have been right all along.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, talking of which, Goldbridge blamed air quotes, and he said the words air quotes or inverted quotes injured players. So he still found a way to blame Bruno and or Marcus Rashford for United's defeat yesterday.
There was a bit just towards the end where I think we're making some kind of substitution and Elise and Wan-Bissaka are schmoozing together, like speaking with their hands covering their mouths like they've signed the Official Secrets Act. It's just like, what are you talking about? Apart from Wan-Bissaka saying, listen, man, if you come to United, you get to play against me in training every day. I mean, it's one of those kind of like where you get the people to tap each other up on international duty, actually. You're tapping him up by showing him how enjoyable his life might be.
Yeah, Anthony was doing something similar after the game as well, like whispering along. And I'm like, I don't normally subscribe to the head in hands, you should be ashamed of yourself sort of thing. But I don't know, it all seemed a bit chummy, didn't it, after getting battered. They just don't care. They're already on the beach.
Yeah, I mean, Palace also is just, I mean, I don't want to take the piss exactly, because I think the Holmesdale Ultras are kids doing their best. And so part of me is just like, you're an old man, let them get on with it. And the other part of me is just, there are other television shows available that aren't Soccer AM. It's just...
Does that still exist? I haven't seen it in years.
I don't know, but that the whole vibe in that ground is like...
Bantry laddie.
Grown up.
Yeah.
Grown up watching Soccer AM and thinking that is how you behave in football. Meanwhile, they're displaying on the scoreboard tweets that people are sending, like, come on, Palace, try hard from Mateus or whatever, all this kind of bullshit. But it is appalling. Because I think one of the things I find unusual, and not unusual because I'm used to it, but annoying and difficult to explain about continental football is just, The noise is just a constant drone. Like there's a drum and they're just singing the same song over and over again. You'll see it in the Dortmund Paris game tonight, I'm sure. And Palace is like that, like no interesting, clever, witty, original songs, just and not much singing either. But when it was, and I realized again, I'm an adult talking about who can clap louder, kind of. The answer is me. Quite a few things I learned in primary school is how to clap extremely loudly. But anyway, so it's just, yeah, I mean, it's not an enjoyable atmosphere, I think. Like, there's no back and forth. It's just, yeah, it's just children singing I Know a song that gets on everybody's nerves. Yeah. And this is how it goes, etc.
United then had the full repertoire of songs out, which, again, was the only enjoyable thing about the game. I mean, it's amazing how Palace have turned things around under Oliver Glasner, isn't it? I mean, they sacked the old man, Roy Hodgson. It looked like they were heading into a relegation battle, and now they're one of the most informed teams in the Premier League. I mean, it's the thing that worried me coming into the game. I was like, they're playing well. They scored 5 the other night, and United are just there for a team that attacks at pace, with Eze and Elise, they really do attack at pace, and Mateta as well, obviously. I mean, it's hard to tell how quick he is because he's up against Evans and Casemiro. So, but yeah, I mean, a lot of talk after the game that United are interested in Elise, unsurprisingly, or a lot of talk before the game too. They might well be interested in Eze as well. Another superb performance from him.
I mean, I didn't even think Eze played that well. I thought like it was just easy for them. I think I love Eze. I think he's a beautiful footballer. I don't see that we have any use for him.
He would play in the sort of, well, attacking third half spaces type role, right? Mount, Bruno.
Bruno, so. Yeah. I'd love to see Eze at United. I don't know if he's quite good enough, but I'd be interested to find out. I'd be interested to find out because like players who can do what he does, like make space, beat people in the middle of the pitch, great. But yeah, we won't be signing him.
Elise would play where Anthony plays. I'm sure, given that United are going to miss out, definitely missing out on Champions League football and may miss out on European football altogether, but finances are going to be tighter. Yeah, he apparently has a release clause in the contract of 60 million. They might want to try and negotiate that down, but at least it makes it easy to do as a deal. But do they need another one? Another right winger? I mean, you've got to get rid of Anthony somehow, surely, haven't you?
I think that they do want a winger. The thing about Elise that gives me pause is let's say you're buying a right winger, whether it's him or not, just depends how the manager wants to play.
Yeah.
Because Elise is wanting to cut inside. He might be useful for Højlund putting place balls to the back post, but my sense is that Højlund probably wants them to the front post. As in, what you get with Elise is you'll get someone who will come inside and might be able to curl headers towards the back post. But I want Højlund scoring the kind of goals that he scored against Wolves, where you've got someone getting to the byline and crossing it low. Those are the kind of goals, front post goals I want from him.
Yeah, and understood. Yeah, I don't know if there's any United player who's going to do that. I mean, Pulisic's not going to stay after the summer. I mean, I'd imagine Ahmed's off as well, and there's a new manager in place. But
I'm not sure why were we trying to sell him? And that's why we kept him, because he got injured. Is that what happened with Ahmed?
I mean, he was injured for the first half of the season. Why he didn't go on loan, I don't know. I mean, when he gets like 5 or 10 minutes, I mean, I don't know how many, I can't remember how many minutes he got last night. A few. I mean, the game was gone by that point, wasn't it?
It's funny you talk about how many minutes he got, because I said before, you know how we've talked about somehow time on the football pitch has been calculated in minutes. The lad I took, we were chatting, he was telling me about his school team. And he was saying how, on his Sunday, school team plays on the wing. Because wants to play up front. On a Sunday, he plays up front, but the school team has a really good striker, so he plays on the wing to get more minutes.
it's entered the vernacular of football, yeah. He got 10, and so did Ethan Wheatley.
I mean, because this was another problem we had, is we couldn't change it or get a look at any of the children, because, sounds weird, but because when you're 4-0 down or whatever it is with 20 to go, you can't make it worse. Children into that situation, because then you're thinking, gosh, what if this isn't 4-0?
Yeah. And it could have been worse. Palace had a number of good chances. So.
Hit the post.
Yeah. Elise missed another one to make it a hat trick.
Well, Onana did nothing, sort of sat there. And there was one good save he made where he also got the ball around the post, but totally absurd that at the beginning of May, I'm noting this as a rarity. Like a good save where the ball actually goes away from the danger zone. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Andre.
Amrabat came on, maybe his best half hour or something in the United shirt. I mean, he ran around a bit, didn't he?
I hate myself for saying this, but I can't believe we sold Fred.
You miss him in games like that, yeah?
Not even... We would have several more points this season if we'd have kept Fred.
Yeah.
And I was desperate to get rid of Fred. Not because he wasn't sometimes good, but I hated the carelessness.
Yeah.
Like the buggering up of 4-yard passes just absolutely did my nut. But Fred is a better player than Amrabat, and we played £10 million for Amrabat's loan. And what did we get for Fred?
About that. Just over, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I don't know how that came about, but whoever brought it about is a penis.
Well, there are several of those, most of whom are no longer in jobs. So there's that.
Yeah. There is one who still is.
Yeah, we should talk about him. We should talk about him because there's been a lot of cataclysmic results under Ten Hag.
Is that possible? Can you have a lot of cataclysmic results?
4-0 versus Brighton, 4-0 versus Brentford, 7-0 versus Liverpool, 6-2 versus City, 5-0 versus Liverpool. Like, dumped out of the Champions League, having lost four games, including to teams like Copenhagen, who are a bus driver up front or something. Sorry, that's disrespectful. But yeah, a lot of really bad results. And after each one, we come on here and said, hey, maybe is this the end? Can you survive that? And I guess we're going to say the same thing again right now. I think probably United lose the next three games as well. And the conversation at the end of the season is going to be slightly different in that it'll be like, how can we possibly keep him? But do you have a different view on that?
So did you know, how many shots United have faced this season? The answer is 618. Derby, 07-08, who finished on 11 points. That's a record. Faced 629 shots.
We could beat it.
What do you mean we can? We are going to. We're going to smash it. We got to concede.
Lads, top of the table.
12 shots in three games.
That's
to beat that.
100% going to happen against Arsenal on Sunday. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we could do that in the half.
That is quite remarkable. So I was looking at the expected points, which when you start to look over a season is a pretty good barometer of over under performance, and United should be in the bottom five this season on the expected points. And a lot of it's because of the huge spike, especially since January, in the expected goals against and the actual goals against, but especially expected. and so, like, funny, you look at that and actually go, well, how is that we've actually overperformed the data this season? Is it just like one-off player goals? Yeah.
Imagine what it's going to be like when the data catches up with us, like it did with Tottenham and Liverpool.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
So what I was thinking yesterday...
Lads, it could get worse.
Yeah, what I was thinking at the game yesterday is that even though, as I said, we can make so many excuses for Ten Hag, the off-the-field stuff, Greenwood, Sancho, Anthony takeover, those four things...
Yeah.
The workload is a consequence of the total shit heap that United is, that, and the injuries. Those are three massive things. Obviously, we're blaming him as well for some of the appalling managerial decisions and apparent lack of plans and coaching and unfeasibility of the end plan as well. But even if we didn't have any of that third aspect, it would still sort of feel like he had to go because it feels like it needs something fresh now. It's on its arse. And they let him go and get three new players in the summer, let's say. I feel like, do we think the players have got faith in this guy? Like, they haven't exactly turned it in for him. They haven't really stopped trying, mainly.
No, I don't think it's that.
But are they going to turn up for pre-season and think, this guy is going to get us going? Or are they going to turn up thinking, few better players, but it's still going to be shit. And my sense is
it's definitely the latter. Yeah, yeah. So
in that situation, unless you can get rid of almost all the dickheads, which feels impossible,
yeah,
then it's very hard to build a case to keep the manager.
I think it's almost impossible. It's 13 defeats in the league. It's 18 overall. I think by the end of the season, it's going to be 20 or 21 or something like that, isn't it? That is more defeats, fewer points, more goals against since the bloody 70s. It's as bad as it gets for United in our lifetimes, basically. I mean, not quite. We have actually done worse than this.
Much worse, but...
Yeah, yeah. But it's like all of those things and whatever mitigations you come up with, it doesn't feel enough. But the other thing is, like, you'd get a few games into the new season, if he stays, any kind of defeat and the pressure is immediately on. And unless there's massive wholesale changes in the squad this summer, then the kind of trauma of what has happened this season will be revisited straight away and the pressure will be on. He's also out of contract in 2025. So you've got a lame duck manager with a squad that doesn't believe him with the trauma of having lost 20-something games in the season the season before. It's just a recipe for total disaster. Then again, the alternative is Gareth bloody Southgate. So it could get worse.
If it's him, I'm totally keeping Ten Hag. I would take Thomas Tuchel ahead of him.
Or maybe Bayern does everyone a favour and offers Ten Hag a job.
And then we don't even have to pay him off.
We don't even have to pay him off. And it can't be a big payoff. I'm sure he's got the same clauses as Moyes and all the others, that they can fire him for a certain amount if United aren't in the Champions League. So let's wait until after the cup final. There's probably an argument at this stage to give it to Ollie to the end of the season and just see if you can get a new manager bounce just for the cup final.
As we were getting into the car, there was a couple of the Palace lads who were just like walking back and they were just pissing themselves. And one of them goes to the other. If they play like that in the cup final, they're going to get absolutely slaughtered.
Yeah.
I don't think they will play like that in the cup final. I think actually, I had said before that I thought there'd be enough time for Varane to come back and get injured again. But now it doesn't look like there is. It does look like we're going to have Shaw back. Fuck knows what we're going to have at the back, at centre back. But it feels like if it isn't Martinez and Varane.
It isn't. It might be Harry Maguire hobbling around.
I thought they said Maguire's gone for the season now.
I don't know. They said 3 weeks. So it seemed to be like a maybe on the cup final, but he wouldn't be fit, would he? I don't know the status of Willy Crumpwala, whether he might be available. But look, the bigger thing is not just the personnel. It's if United play open like that, then of course United are going to get destroyed. It's going to have to be a performance where they, and we've said this last year in the cup final, where they play ultra defensively and try and use their fast players to carry the ball. Don't play like that at the moment, though. They play with this big donut and big hole in midfield on the transition and then playing very direct football, which means City get 80% of the possession and score a ton of goals anyway.
Yeah, well, you're kind of sitting there when they're knocking it about side and you're going, how many sideways passes are they going to make before they knock you back to another and he whacks it long?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they made a game of it last season in the cup final, sort of. They lost by a goal. And Garnacho had a chance at the end.
Yeah.
So it is, and City probably a little bit worse this season than last. So I think if we had a full first 11 who were fit, then I'd semi-fancy us, I think. But I don't know, have a clue how you, because there are players that obviously need a rest. How do you rest? You rest Maino and I want to rest Maino and Garnacho. But you have to keep them sharp. But at the same time, how can you rest them? Because what do you have to put in their stead?
Well, there's nothing. Mainu definitely needs to rest. He does look burnt out. He had to cover a lot of ground last night, which he couldn't do. So, yeah, I mean, I guess, like, if we don't want City winning the league again, we rest a bunch of players for Arsenal on Sunday and chuck that one.
But that doesn't, that's probably not in mind even, because I bet Bruno could have played last night if he'd had to, and I bet he plays on Sunday.
Yeah, and then pulls up with an Achilles injury and he's out for the cup final in the summer. Yeah, that would be very typical. He's played like 200 and some games for United. That's the first time he's missed a game through injury. He's a machine, is Bruno, unlike the rest of them who are not. I don't know who's going to be available. It's not going to be a full complement of United players. And in any case, I don't know how you turn it on for one game after like winding the season down so poorly. Are they suddenly going to turn it on Sunday? Like, how? There's just no world in which they
turn it on Sunday.
No world in which they suddenly become good. And then it's Newcastle straight afterwards, having had a couple of batterings in a row, presumably. Newcastle are playing well.
Yeah. And are the kind of team that we have no antidote for because they're way too physical for us.
Yeah. Yeah. So Brighton presumably rests everyone in order to, or maybe if Shaw's back, he gets a few minutes. I'm not sure. He has been training though, hasn't he? So I think it's two defeats coming up, Arsenal and Newcastle in a row. And then who knows what happens against Brighton on the final day, but you go into that cup final with absolutely no momentum whatsoever. Doom and gloom, sorry.
It would be okay if we were getting to play ourselves. as Chelsea found in 2017, that you can go into a cup final with no momentum, but only if you're playing United, I guess.
Apparently.
Yeah, well, look, Ten Hag is not getting sacked before the cup final.
And Dean Henderson.
Dean Henderson keeping a clean sheet. It's just, yeah, hang your heads in shame.
Really should. Well, shall we talk about Sunday a little bit? Because we're not going to be, I'm away for the next few days. Up in the mountains with a bunch of school kids. I got volunteered.
That also sounds weird. That sounds like a Scandinavian noir of some sort.
Yeah, I will try to keep them safe.
I mean, yeah, Ed was talking about the school trip he's going on, and I feel like if I was on such a thing, I would set new records for levels of intoxication. If I was sent on a school trip where I didn't know the other dads, and all the other ones were like from Seattle.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd be giving Roy Carson a call to come and check my pulse.
Deary me.
Think yeah. Dedication.
I won't be doing that. I will be sober as a judge for this particular trip. But yeah, won't be doing a midweek pod or the dailies this week. So let's talk about Arsenal a little bit. I mean, they're going for the title. Presumably we want Arsenal to win the title, despite how annoying and persistent their fans are and how annoying Mikel Arteta is. But better than City winning a fourth in a row.
By many, many orders of magnitude.
By many, many orders of magnitude, yeah. So presumably we want to chuck this game on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it will be funny if we beat them. Or even draw with them. So it feels like we could call it win-win, but really it's lose-lose.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. And what kind of team's going to come out? I mean, it's going to be the same again. He seems reluctant to give Harry Amess a try in like left back, even though it was an absolute disaster class from Wan-Bissaka last night. So, like, why not? He's on the bench last night. He's been on the bench before. Why not?
I agree. I mean, I'd say I agree. I totally understand why, because if you're sticking a 17-year-old against, is he 17, Banky, against Michael Olise, it could go extremely wrong. I mean, I'm not saying John Curtis was going to be a world beater. I am saying that RAF sting he got off Mark Overmars in April 98 probably did affect his career in some way.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah. I mean, he did look very talented when he first played in the first team, didn't he, Curtis, for the first couple of games. I can't remember his debut. Was it against Barnsley? Something like that, anyway.
Did he play in that 7-0 against Barnsley?
Might have done, yeah. I remember thinking he looked really good at right back.
Yeah, they thought he might be a player.
Yeah, I think I see him on Twitter now and again. I think he's coaching in the US or something like that.
Have we finally seen the back of Amari Forson, or is he injured?
Good question. I mean, given who is on the bench, obviously Wheatley and Diallo, Ogunay, Jackson, Amess, Collier. I mean, a lot of kids on the bench there. Jeez. And not Amari Forson. He's out of contract as well, Amari Forson. So I guess the assumption he will be looking for employment elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, he's done phenomenally well to have this number of matches for United. Amari Forson. But I mean, I don't want to say this. I haven't loved what I've seen of Wheatley. I mean, we're talking about bugger all, so I don't want to go there. But
I don't know. I mean, he's not that mobile, but it's hard to, like, with 10 minutes, right? So won't judge him yet.
Yeah.
The under-23 side's not been that awesome this season. The under-18s most certainly has won the double. A lot of talent there, but obviously just a bit young to be pushing into the first team frame. Maybe a few of these guys will get a game on Sunday. Who knows? It's not going to be pretty, though.
None of these guys are getting a game on Sunday because he doesn't want to get beaten 74-0. And we're there, so we're going to see our good players step through another game and we're going to lose 3-0 or something, probably. And it's just, yeah, like the way that the season's going to end by the looks of things, it feels like the position will necessarily be untenable because of that.
Yeah.
That it will need something new. And almost, if you can't afford to properly revamp the squad, it will really need some fresh impetus off a fresh manager.
Yeah, all right. We'll leave it there. I agree. I think events will determine that is likely to be true. And also, we've got to factor in Berada starts in July. Doesn't look like Ashworth will going to end up in court, basically, to try and get him out of his contract or in arbitration. But it's the thing that overarches all of this is what Ineos's vision is for, or I guess Wilcox, Berada and Ashworth's vision is for how they want the team to play. The game model and the play style, as people say these days. What did you make, before we leave, Go? What did you make of Ten Hag's interview with Gary Neville?
I didn't see it.
You didn't see it?
Sorry, I got a thing of that one. But tell me about it. I'm sure he
knows. I mean, honestly, I just thought it was kind of a little bit pathetic. A lot of excuses about injuries. A lot of talk about the game model, but no. I mean, he used those terms. Oh, Neville used the term. And play style, but no real details. So scratching the surface and a lot of excuses. And he's got no charisma at all. You know, he's just doesn't inspire.
Right. And then, like, the tactical bit has to be bang on. And it feels like perhaps it isn't.
It's definitely not bang on. All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, everyone. Catch you again at the weekend.
Please.
Okay, this is the backers bit. We're going to talk a little bit about the new PSR rules with the hard salary cap that have been voted in. Well, at least they've voted to study it further. So that it's not guaranteed that these new rules come in, but we thought we'd just go through that, what it looks like, what it might mean for United, why the clubs have voted the way they have, and so on. So, like, the basics are, it's proposed that not only will the Premier League's PSR rules move to a UEFA-style squad cost rule, which means that clubs in UEFA competitions will be able to spend up to 70% of their revenue on wages, amortised transfer fees and agents' fees, or and any impairments they choose to take, or 85% if they're outside of UEFA competitions. Obviously, you like closing the gap between those two things a little bit. And then a really interesting thing was that 16 clubs voted for this proposed anchoring, which is, it looks like they're going to study it at 4.5 times the lowest paid clubs' broadcast revenues, which last year would have been Southampton, 103 million, which would be 4.5 times that. Work it out, or 5 times that is 515, 4.5 times is 450 something. That would be your hard cap maximum spent on all of that. Which in United's case, with a wage bill in the 280s or something, actually leaves quite a lot of room for spending. They voted against it. So did City. That's because we both have huge commercial revenues, which aren't in these calculations. And Aston Villa voted against it as well, which tells you something about, I think, their ambitions, because they have very, very rich owners, which people don't tend to talk about with Villa. So that's it. Thoughts, Dan?
So something that doesn't sit right with me is this selling homegrown players being good for your PSR. That feels wrong.
Yeah, because there's no amortization cost. So
you're going to have Chelsea trying to bin off Conor Gallagher, say.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd bin him because I think he's very good, but he has had quite a good season for them.
Yeah.
So they don't want
to. They had a big TIFO for him the other day.
Oh my gosh, that was shit. Oh my gosh, that was shit.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, over the long piece, it's not a benefit because it just means you can do it straight away. So there is a limit, and the limit is how many players you can sell, basically. And you can't just keep having to do that. So Chelsea's model of buying loads of players and short-term selling them off for an immediate PSR hit runs out once they've run out of players to sell, basically. So, yeah, it's not some magic trick. There's not magic money. It's just accounting.
Yeah. But it doesn't feel right, and I'm still not sure if this is the best way of paring down spending. Because what we're trying to do here, I guess, is we're trying to regulate the market so you can't have owners turning up and just saying, taking some shit heap of a team like City and turning them into champions just because they're rich. That's,
yeah.
Which I think is right. Like, that is anti-competitive. It does feel like something needed to be done to improve the competition at the top end, though. Because, I mean, what you had, and it wasn't even just something that's happening in England. It's just if you're in a smaller league, less wealthy league, and you win the league a few times in a row, then your constant supply of champions money means you could do. I mean, Lyon did it in France. They won it like 7 years in a row or something in France. And I think PSV did it in a lot, like 10, 20 years ago as well. They just keep qualifying, keep milking the Champions League money, and that enables them to dominate their league. So that isn't right either, but this way of doing it doesn't feel optimal. What would you say is the best way of trying to equalize things? And
And it's not far off, because the split between the 70% and 85%, if that's what they adopt, and that's not been ratified, by the way, it's just the proposal on the table, that does even the gap between the Champions League teams and the ambitious teams, right? It's just saying you can spend a bit more because they're not in the UEFA competitions, and therefore, I mean, the ones that actually hurts most, I think, is the team that qualifies for the Conference League,
because
they're getting no money and a harder cap, or a lower spending rate. The hard cap on total budget, that one would be interesting, because I presume it's going to be challenged by the PFA. He'll say this is a restriction of our trade. There may even be City may even think it's a restriction of their ability to juice the market by getting more Abu Dhabi-based sponsors. I'm sure Newcastle voted for it, which was interesting. Or maybe they're okay with it and they just want to boost their commercial revenues in the meantime. Maybe they think it's a way of just holding City back while they try and catch up. I don't know. Chelsea abstained. I don't know why. Doesn't make a lot of sense there. But I mean, to answer your question, I think it's not far away from something that makes things a bit fairer. And given that the Premier League has a massive spending advantage over the next biggest spending league, which is La Liga, anyway, it shouldn't affect the competitiveness. And it will like restrict, it will make clubs more sustainable. What we've seen this year with Everton and Nottingham Forest is because they did unsustainable spending after the pandemic. Basically, when they shouldn't have done that, and then thought they'd be able to get away with it, and then Mashiri ran out of cash, which is another interesting facet of all of this.
Yeah, another fit and proper individual.
God, it's a mess what's happening at Everton. It's not quite related. It's more about, like, basically Mashiri, like, didn't want to spend it. He's lost £500 million on Everton. He didn't want to spend any more money, so he started looking for other investors. He ended up getting a loan off this company MSP, which is lent money to a few clubs. The part of the contract is that it's secured not only on the new stadium, which is a second loan, but on Mashiri's shares in Everton. So if they default Everton, MSP, this lending company, Vulture Capital company, could end up owning Mashiri's shares in Everton. At the same time, they've been trying to sell to 777 Partners. The holding company for 777 Partners has been accused of basically being a Ponzi scheme, of borrowing money against assets which they'd already sold. I mean, it's just unbelievable stuff, actually. I mean, the kind of stuff that people end up going to prison for after an SEC investigation. They didn't make the payment to MSP that they should have done, which means the loan went into default. MSP said, no, it's okay. We're not going to reclaim our shares here. You can pay next time out. It doesn't look like 77 Partners are going to be able to do that. So Everton are going to run out of cash, basically. And there's people speculating online that they may end up in administration as a result. It may be their best option. They would end up with a new co playing in the Championship with a -9 point deduction. And they wouldn't own their own stadium. So it's not good, you know.
And this is why football, this is why we need proper governance.
Yeah.
That's why we need an independent regulator.
Yeah.
Because it's very clear the Premier League are not equipped to do this, probably partly because they don't really care.
No, I mean, it's clearly the Premier League have decided, and the Premier League is the clubs, right? They're not a separate entity. It's what the clubs vote for. The clubs voted for unrestricted, unfettered money coming into the game from outside investors, because everyone who owns a Premier League club would like to be able to sell, and they want no tightening of that market. they want to be able to exit if they want. And especially now we've got like basically half the league American owned private equity companies or investors who are probably not there for 25 years holding a community asset. They're probably there to sell at a profit at some point. So yeah Premier League can't govern itself for sure.
No, and it sort of should be able to, but it's proved that that is in fact not something that is capable of doing. So, I mean, I don't know what will happen because the Tories are trying to bring in the independent regulator, but my sense is that Starmer likes football. So why would he not do it?
I think he will. I mean, the bill will go through before the election unless Rishi backs up his confidence in getting a hung parliament.
Hung members.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I can't imagine Rishi's hung. He doesn't seem the kind of guy. He doesn't demonstrate any, BDE.
No.
Seemed very much the opposite. Rather like Ten Hag. I reckon Ten Hag's got a bit of a wiener, little one.
The opposite of a tripod.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is what they called the Dutch dart player, Martin Schulten's nickname was tripod. Fair enough. So they say to Tom Aspinall, the UFC heavyweight champion, he's a British guy, they basically said to him, are you a heavyweight? I think I even said, are you a tripod? And he said, no. And this guy is obviously like enormous. So he could have.
No one's going to argue with him.
And everyone could have believed him, but no.
That's the kind of analysis you guys come for. Yeah. I mean, like coming back to governance, yeah, for sure. This independent regulator, I think the bill will go through. Like there's still a large Tory majority until we get the election, probably right at the end of the year or something, like pushing up against the deadline. I think Starmer, he claims to be a football fan. Doesn't he claim to be an Arsenal fan? It's rather unfortunate.
Yeah, and you went on the Football Cliches pod, I think I read.
I didn't hear that one, yeah. God, I can't imagine he was entertaining.
It seems unlikely.
So I think it will go through. And and what's happening now is the Premier League are both trying to show they can govern themselves through this new potential rules around the hard cap and some sharing of wealth. They're also lobbying hard because some MPs have been noting it. But, I mean, every industry does that. So I don't blame the Premier League for trying to lobby in their own interests,
yeah, it is just so odd that the people that run football hate football, but they don't care about football, yet they run football.
They care about the money.
It could be anything though. It doesn't feel like they're doing it because it's football. They're just like, here's a suit, it's a job.
We covered PSR, covered the mess at Everton, Forest today. Their 4-point deduction for breaching last season's PSL rules has been held up. They're probably safe, though, aren't they, Forrest? I mean, Everton are definitely safe unless they go into administration right now, which...
They've just got to sort of hide their accounts.
They've got to hide it until the end of the season. They'll start next season with a 9-point deduction, if they did that. So, yeah, Forrest, I mean, they're a point away from being safe, aren't they, basically? So,
and also, just Forrest have some good players. They have... Yeah. Forest have much better players than the teams that are around them, I would suggest. But yeah, they're now 5 points ahead of the Chiggers.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised that they've come the closest staying up out of these teams because the way that they play serves their home form. But yeah, like Forest have got some much better players than they have.
Yeah, they got better players because they massively overspent. Because
they cheated.
Because they cheated, basically.
So I think though that I don't know who it's going to be, because you look at the bottom. So let's say the bottom three are down, right? If you read up the table from 17th, Forest, Brentford, Everton, Palace, Fulham, Wolves, Brighton, Bournemouth, right? If you've got Leicester are coming up. If Leeds were to come up as well, don't know what Ipswich are going to be like, but it's going to be hard to stay up next season because if Leeds come up as well, two clubs with money and players. Come up, Leicester aren't necessarily going to go back down yet. Probably, like, there's a good chance they won't. So some of the teams who have sort of become Premier League staples are probably going to struggle next season.
Yeah, it'd be interesting because there's a lot of debate. I mean, tied to the debate around money and sharing of money. Like if Leeds do manage to come up by the playoffs as well, that'd be two clubs back up who went down last season. I mean, I guess Southampton are in the shout there as well, aren't they, in the playoff position? So there's a lot of debate about whether parachute payments skew the championship, which they do.
I mean, yeah, I don't think there's any debate about that. It's just we've got to understand why we have them.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're what the solution is. It's not something I've, I guess, thought about very much.
Pure glide slope. I mean, if you want to get rid of
clubs that come up to be able to compete, but then they can't, they're bankrupt themselves. They go straight back down again.
Exactly. That's why the parachute payments exist. The way of fixing that would be to have a pure glide slope, which is like the top team in the championship earns just a bit less than the bottom team in the Premier League, but that would be a level of financial sharing that the Premier League is not willing to go to.
But you look at if you look at the points you've got, so in Champa, you've got Leicester and Ipswich, 97 and 96, and Leeds on 19, Southampton on 87. So then you see West Brom and Norwich are in the playoff spots, 75 and 73. And at that point, you're like, it feels like they have so many points fewer, that it'll probably be one of them.
Yeah. Well, it often goes like that, doesn't it? In the championship playoff.
I can't be doing West Brom coming back, although I do like the Vine Pub
next to the Hawthorns. Yeah,
yeah. Norwich is. Yeah, Norwich can stay away forever.
Yeah. No, I don't care much about Norwich. Ipswich, they're in a similar position to Luton in the sense that they've got a very small budget. They've massively overperformed under Kieran McKenna. They've still got quite a few of the players that are in League One, he'll be, I mean, I don't know how many of them survive the summer because Ipswich will obviously spend some money.
Possibly kill them.
Yeah, no. there's
a serial killer
roaming around. Yeah. No, unlikely. They've come up not only with McKenna, who's derided for a lot of his time at United for being in the job he wasn't qualified for, but turns out he's quite a good coach. But they've also done it with Brandon Williams and Axel Tuanzebe in the squad, or Brandon Williams, who spent most of the season injured. So, yeah, he might not be staying. But Axel Tuanzebe has actually played quite a few games for him, which is amazing. Anyway, good to them. All right, that'll be it. Just a quick rundown of the latest on football finances. And thank you very much for your support, everyone.
Cheers, everyone. Thank you. We appreciate you.